You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
Missouri dairy farmers, love issues, etc.
And what they're doing while listening to issues, etc.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love issues, etc.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. There's no doubt about it. It is the brave new world. Not only the technology that medicine presents us has its ethical challenges, but also the challenges that are at the very root of those ethics in medical ethics and bioethics. There is a deep divide in the United States and a legal battle as well in some cases for, well, let's just be honest, for the life of those that some deem not worth living or not worthy of being called persons. How was 2017 in terms of those bioethical challenges, and what are the top bioethical issues that we face in 2018? Joining us to answer those questions, Wesley Smith, he's senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism. He's a consultant to the Parents' Rights Council and author of several books, including Culture of Death, The Age of Do Harm Medicine, and a columnist for National Review Online. Wesley, welcome back.
Hey, Todd. Happy New Year.
How was 2017 in terms of bioethics? Was it a good year for sound bioethics or a bad year?
It was basically a pretty quiet year, and that to me is not a good year. The reason being that the few things that did happen of consequence were not good. There was one area that was very good, and that was the fundamental defeat of assisted suicide legalization in about 25 or 30 states in the country. But Washington, D.C. did legalize it last year. But for the most part, the unstoppable assisted suicide juggernaut that I've been hearing about since 1994, when Oregon legalized assisted suicide, still it hasn't become unstoppable. But other than that, it was awfully quiet. One of the things that I think was a great disappointment was how the mainstream media and people on the pro-choice left circled the wagons around the awful Planned Parenthood videotapes. And even, I think there's been an abuse of a process by California's Attorney General in the prosecution of David DeLeiden, who was the undercover person who did those tapes. That's a very disturbing thing when you are, you know, if you're an animal rights activist and you get into some kind of an animal industry under false pretenses and you take videos and you show those and on YouTube and so forth, there's never a prosecution of you. In fact, there was a law to try to prevent that was declared unconstitutional. I think it was in Idaho. Yet David DeLeiden goes into public places for the most part. And not only is he being prosecuted, his computers were seized and this kind of thing. So I think people understand that that there's a certain lack of equality in law enforcement in some of these issues. So that to me was a very big disappointment. On the other hand, there is going to be a congressional investigation and perhaps even, as I read recently, a DOJ investigation of the claims of selling fetal baby parts by Planned Parenthood. So we'll see how that goes. But for the most part, for me anyway, it was a disappointment because President Trump has not grappled at all, in my view, with the exception of some pro-life legislation and activities. But he has really fundamentally not grappled with bioethical or biotechnological issues. And those are some of the most important, if not so much discussed, issues we face as a society.
Previous presidents have had a council on bioethics. They have comprised it differently, but I think, if I'm not mistaken, there's been one at least since the George W. Bush years. He had a council.
And Clinton had one, too. Yeah, Clinton had one. George W. Bush had one. George W. Bush's was called the President's Council on Bioethics, and it was certainly the most consequential of those committees, led by Leon Cass, who's a tremendous bioethicist. And they issued a series of stellar reports, very well thought out reports about the most important issues of the day. But because they were, in essence, from a more conservative angle, the media tended to ignore them. And the mainstream bioethics movement, which is very liberal, attacked them, even though the reports were not polemic in their nature. President Trump, unfortunately, hasn't even appointed such a committee or a council. And I think that's a huge mistake, because part of the job of the council is to advise the president. But I think part of the job of the council, as the Cass Commission attempted to do, is to educate the public and in essence generate some news so that the media covers these issues, which are really important. Biotechnology in particular is developing powers that are the most portentous since the splitting of the atom. And I'm talking about the power to genetically engineer any life form, any cell. It's something called CRISPR, C-R-I-S-P-R, which stands for Clustered Regularly Interspaced Short Palindromic Repeat, which is the method of doing it. That's why you don't call it by the scientific term, but CRISPR, C-R-I-S-P-R, I think is the most consequential technology to be invented since the atom bomb. It has tremendous opportunity to provide incredible benefit for the human race and for the world, but also tremendous potential, if abused, to cause catastrophe in the same way as atomic energy. For example, it's possible that with CRISPR, we'll be able to help people with Huntington's disease. It's also possible with CRISPR that a terrorist could take a bird flu, change it in a genetic way so that we have no resistance to it, and unleash a pandemic. Yet, despite the incredible power of that technology, it's primarily unregulated. You've got some voluntary guidelines in the scientific community. You've got some restrictions on government funding. But we have not had the kind of conversation internationally, which is what's required. Otherwise, you end up outsourcing ethics, as my friend Bill Hurlbut calls it. If you have one country where anything goes, the bad players will go to that anything goes country. So you not only have to have a national conversation about how to regulate, if and whether to regulate this among other very powerful technologies, but international. And the only way that's going to happen is if somebody with the ability of President Trump to basically generate headlines and get the news media focused on a particular issue, if he will get involved in it. And so far, he's been completely silent, not even a tweet.
So let's talk a little bit about one that seems almost quaint nowadays, the issue of human cloning. What is on the forefront there?
Well, human cloning is another one of these issues where nothing is happening where it needs to happen. During the Bush years, you'll recall, in fact, I was on your show many times dealing with these issues, this embryonic stem cell and human cloning issues were front page stories. And part of that was because the media was trying to use it to bash Bush and say that Bush didn't want people in wheelchairs to walk again and that kind of thing as in ways that I thought were terribly biased and wrong and inaccurate. But once Bush was out of office and Obama was in office, there was no real discussion of these issues. And now, unlike in the Bush years, human cloning has been done. Scientists have learned how to create a human embryo in the same way that the embryo was created that led to Dolly the sheep. They have not tried to create a born baby from it, but cloning is the creation of human life asexually. And whether you use the embryo that's created, which is human life, for experiments or you want to bring a born baby into the world, you're still creating human life through an asexual means. This also is completely unregulated except for a few states in this country. It cannot be funded by the NIH because of a regulation that predates human cloning. But it also needs to be discussed, because now that it can be done, should it be done? And if it should be done, under what circumstances should it be done? I'm of the school that all human cloning should be outlawed. But at least let's have a discussion so that people can understand the stakes that are at play here, rather than this, again, kind of wild, wild west atmosphere that permits anything goes on one of the most pretentious and consequential technologies ever invented.
Why are you of the mind that all human cloning should be outlawed?
Because you're treating human beings as an object instead of a subject. You are creating a human life through manufacture, and that then leads to quality control. And so you're looking for a particular genome when you do human cloning. It's to obtain a particular genome, and often for instrumental use. So one potential proposed use of human cloning, once synthetic wombs are created and they're on their way, is you create a clone of somebody who needs an organ transplant. You take the embryo, you maintain it in that synthetic gestating equipment until a certain point, and then you destroy the fetus for the organs that are then used in the transplant. Now, that to me is an abhorrent idea of creating human life to be used as an organ transplant. It can't be done now, but that's just one idea that people have actually advanced in bioethics journals for use of human cloning. I was once in a debate against Brigitte Boucier, who was part of the Raelian cult and also a scientist from Advanced Cell Technology. And what horrible thing happened, this woman in this cult brought these grieving parents, and this, you may recall, was when they were pretending that they had cloned human babies, you know, to birth. And she brought these grieving parents in and gave a presentation at this debate that she could actually recreate their children. And it was, I thought it was one of the most disgusting, despicable things I'd ever seen. And I was talking to some of these grieving parents afterwards, and I said, first, they can't do it. It's not been done yet. And second, even if you could take the DNA from a deceased child and bring that child to birth, that wouldn't be that child. It would be the twin of that child, and it would be unfair to that child, because that child would have all these expectations of being the deceased brother or sister. So these are just a few of the things. And then the idea of using cloned embryonic stem cells, again, you're creating human life to be used as if it were nothing but a copper mine or a corn crop. And I think that's something that we really need to talk about.
People, you had mentioned David Dalyden and his exposure of what Planned Parenthood and other biotech companies had been doing with what they would consider to be kind of the cast-offs from their industry, fetal body parts, the body parts of aborted babies. It sounds like if human cloning were to be permitted, that would be where people would be looking to make their profit, it sounds like.
There's certainly that potential. And right now, biotechnologists might say, well, we have a 14-day rule that says you cannot maintain an embryo past 14 days without implantation. Well, right now, you cannot do that biologically. So that if you were going to create a clone and try to maintain it, you'd have to implant it in a woman's womb, because there isn't a synthetic womb that would permit that. So this idea that there's some kind of a prohibition, what you have to understand, Todd, is that in biotech, they'll be willing to prohibit the things they cannot do to enable them to do the research that will allow them to do it. And once they get to that place, then the ban will be tossed aside. So we are already now seeing, as science is advancing, and they think they can actually keep embryos going for more than 14 days, there's now beginning the early movement to try to do away with the 14-day rule and make it, say, a 24-day rule. And then once you did the 24-day rule and they got to the place where you could keep it longer, then the 24-day rule would be done away with. So we need to not do this kind of piecemeal pretense. We need to have a very fundamental and substantive conversation, not only about what can be done now, what can be done in the future, and what we may want to permit and what we don't want to permit. Because there's tremendous benefit to be received from from some of these technologies. CRISPR as just one example, as I mentioned. But these are all dual-edged kind of technologies. And we need to create the future biotech future we want, not just passively accept one that comes along because we haven't decided to engage this issue and just go along with whatever comes along, because that's a prescription for disaster.
Wesley Smith is our guest. We're talking about the top bioethical issues for 2018. When we come back, we'll talk about synthetic life and return to the issue of assisted suicide. He had mentioned earlier that Washington, D.C. legalized it. We'll talk about the states that didn't as well after this.
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Children are a heritage from the Lord, but what of those who've not been given the gift of a child? The cross of barrenness affects not only childless couples, it affects the family, friends, and pastors who love and care for them. I'm Katie Schuerman, and I'm partnering with Emmanuel Press to publish the second edition of my book, He Remembers the Barren, a story about the hope and contentment found only in Christ, no matter the cross we bear. Visit emmanuelpress.us to learn more. emmanuelpress.us.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that you can listen to our 24/7 talk and music stations using Amazon Echo? All you have to do is say, Alexa, play Lutheran Public Radio.
Lutheran Public Radio.
Or, Alexa, play Lutheran Talk Radio.
Lutheran Talk Radio.
Own thing, you know, there's this recognition that unrighteous mammon...
Lutheran music, Lutheran talk, anytime, day or night, on Amazon Echo.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the top bioethical issues for 2018. Wesley Smith is our guest, senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism, a consultant to the Patients' Rights Council. He is author of several books, including Culture of Death, The Age of Do Harm Medicine, and he's a columnist for National Review Online. You can read his column and purchase his book, Culture of Death, at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on demand. Wesley, a few minutes ago you mentioned synthetic wombs, but there's also synthetic life on the table too, isn't there?
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. This is very early research, but scientists have actually already created a life form that has never existed in evolution or creation. It was a small independent organism of only 473 genes, but they are literally learning how to create life that does not exist in the natural world. Talk about playing God, right? That, again, is something that I think requires a very intense discussion. Just like artificial intelligence does, which is another booming issue, where you're going to be creating very shortly computers that actually will take over their own programming and may be able to work independent of human control. Well, what could go wrong, right? And yet these things are going forward. I mean, the power and imagination of scientists knows few bounds. And we're all just, as a society, sitting around with our jaws gaping, watching and wondering what's going to happen. Well, that's not, you know, we're human beings, and one thing that we have the power to do is actually take control and decide. We do not have to be flotsam and jetsam floating on the ocean. We can actually grapple with these issues, decide what is productive, what is too dangerous, what is morally problematic, and control how we proceed in the future. It's not Ludditism to say we shouldn't do science. Of course we should do science. But good science requires good ethics, and good science requires oversight. Any powerful human institution, which is what our founders totally understood, requires checks and balances. And right now, all we have, for the most part, are the goodwill of the scientists doing the research. That's a slight exaggeration, but we really need good checks and balances, and because the science has leapt way past our existing bureaucratic and regulatory structures. And that's, in article after article, I'm trying to throw up flares. I feel like I'm on the Titanic, you know, throwing up flares, trying to get people's attention to say, at least have the conversation. Don't just let this thing happen without any of us getting engaged. But that seems to be, at least at the moment, where we're at.
You had mentioned attempts to legalize assisted suicide. And you mentioned D.C. was the one place where it, rather unsurprisingly, did pass. Where did it fail?
Oh, gosh, it failed all over the country. It failed in New York. It failed in Massachusetts. It failed in Wisconsin. It failed in Hawaii. It failed, you can name almost, 25 or 26 states, and they did not succeed. They're going to come back again this year. Massachusetts, the state medical association, has been persuaded to go neutral, which I can't understand. How do you go neutral on something this important? So who knows what that will bring. New York is going to grapple with it again. Certainly Maryland. Maryland it was a specific failure that I was partially involved with. So Hawaii will bring it up again. You might see it in Arizona, Wisconsin. South Dakota was supposed to have an initiative, and they were unable to get nearly the signatures required to put it on the ballot. So that was a really big fail for assisted suicide last year.
So let's talk about what is now legal then in Washington, D.C. What can happen in Washington, D.C. now that that law has passed?
Well, if you have a terminal illness and you want to kill yourself, you can go to a doctor, and that doctor can issue a lethal prescription with the intent that it cause your death. The good news, if there is any in that, is that D.C., just like the other states that have legalized it here in the United States, gives a full conscience protection so that doctors who do not want to participate cannot be punished for refusing to participate. So my hope is that doctors will say, listen, I got into medicine to be a healer, to palliate suffering, to palliate pain, and to help people live healthy lives. I'm not about to help kill you. And so hopefully that, as has occurred in most states, very few doctors will actually be willing to participate in assisted suicide.
So with about a minute here, what's the push for assisted suicide? Why do they say we need the ability to legally kill ourselves with the or without the assistance of a physician?
You know, that's a question worthy of a whole show. Because there's a lot involved here that I get into in my speeches. But for many people, the purpose of society has become eliminating suffering. And once you decide that eliminating suffering becomes the overriding purpose of society, that quickly morphs into eliminating the sufferer. And so you have a lot of people thinking that this is actually something that is beneficial. Unstated is there's also a financial aspect to this, because what could be cheaper in a time of healthcare cost cutting? What could be a cheaper close quote treatment close quote than assisted suicide? It may cost $1,000 for an assisted suicide when $100,000 would help that patient not want to kill themselves. And so you can see the danger is very clear. But I would love us to take 15 or 30 minutes to actually go over what is behind this issue of assisted suicide. 100 years ago, when people died in agony, you didn't see a call for assisted suicide. Now, when pain can be alleviated, and people are not committing assisted suicide because of pain, by the way, but because of existential issues such as worried about being a burden, fears of losing the ability to engage in enjoyable activity. Suddenly we're told that death with dignity is an overdose of drugs. So that's a question very deeply worth pondering. And it also gets into the secularization of society as well.
Finally, with only a minute, how would you respond to someone who says, look, Wesley, by calling out the alarm on all these things, you're simply standing in the way of scientific advancement. 1 minute here, Wesley.
Well, I mean, science is not, you want to live in a scientocracy? I don't. I think that we live in a free society. Science is a very important and crucial aspect of our society. It's a crucial sector. And in a democratic society, we have a right to have proper democratic boundaries set over where science can and cannot go. We do that just, for example, in animal research. Animal research is an essential part of science, but we also know that animals can feel pain and so forth, and so there are rules and regulations in the Animal Welfare Act to govern that, and as there should be. So, I mean, if you're going to say, just do whatever the science wants, well, then let's do as many experiments on chimps as we wish. Let's do experiments on people in cognitive disabled states and so forth, because then we're not worried about ethics. But we do worry about ethics. Science isn't the only thing. It's a very important thing, but so are ethics, morality, safety, and democratic processes.
Wesley Smith is Senior Fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism, a consultant to the Patients' Rights Council, and author of several books, including Culture of Death, The Age of Due Harm Medicine. He's a columnist for National Review Online. Wesley, thank you very much.
Thanks, Todd. Good talking to you again.
In Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., we'll talk about the death of the president of the Mormon Church, Thomas Monson. Bill McKeever will be our guest, and then Terry Mattingly will join us, talk about a national public radio story on how 2017 has been a rough year for evangelicals. Digital technology in the church is the theme of the latest edition of the Lutheran Witness magazine. You can learn more at cph.org/try-Lutheran-witness. That's cph.org/try-Lutheran-witness. Interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective, the Lutheran Witness magazine. When we come back, we're going to turn to the subject of a recent death of, well, he's the president, the chief revelator, and kind of the voice of God, or at least he was until he passed away. Thomas Monson was the president of the Mormon Church. Who will replace him? What will that mean? We'll answer all those questions with Bill McKeever of Mormonism Research Ministry right after this.
Providing artillery support for the church militant on the front lines, you're listening to Issues Etc.